Welcome to the Remington Podcast, where we take a deep dive into all things ammunition. I'm your host, Audrey Mays, and we're doing things a little differently this time around. Pheasants Forever is one of Remington's amazing partners in wildlife conservation, and this past weekend was their yearly show, Pheasant Fest. I made the trip up to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where the show was held this year, and got to speak to some great upland hunters and conservationists about Pheasants Forever's involvement in habitat work, land access issues and solutions, and the beauty in all aspects of the upland hunting community. We're making this a three-part series, and all episodes will be released on consecutive Mondays. For part one of this series, we're talking to Jared Wickland, the Director of Communications for Pheasants Forever, and we're live on the Pheasant Fest floor. You're not going to want to miss this one. Jared Wickland, Director of Communications for Pheasants Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're here live at Pheasant Fest 2024.
We are.
Happy to be here. How's the event going so far?
You know, it's going great. It's been a steady line of people all day. At one point, it was getting a little bit hard to move in here, so I think it's eased up as we're going into Saturday afternoon at 2:30, 3 o'clock. But yeah, it's been a steady stream of traffic. We've raised a bunch of money already for access initiatives, when I'm told, at some of our fundraisers here throughout the weekend. We've got 4,300 new members already this weekend, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So people coming through the gates. So I think all in all, it's been a wonderful weekend thus far. We kicked it off with Trampled by Turtles Concert for Conservation on Thursday night. We had 2,000 people, sold out show, people headbanging and rocking. So it was quite a spectacle, and it just carried right into the weekend.
Yeah, that awesome. Concert was a new addition, right? Have you ever done a concert before?
Nope. First time. Bob St. Pierre, our Vice President of Marketing and Communications, or Chief Marketing Officer rather, has been working with Trampled by Turtles and lead singer Dave Simonette for a while, sort of got him into wing shooting a couple of years ago. And after, you know, plenty of tailgate conferences that they had after hunts, decided like, now is the time. Let's try to do it. And it turned out great. It'd been pretty much sold out for about a month. And it was awesome.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get a ticket. It was great.
Cool.
Yeah, the show was great.
Did you have a good seat?
I was in row P. I mean, I don't think there was a bad seat in the house.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool place at Washington Pavilion there. So yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you know, wing shooting definitely brings a lot of people together. There's a lot of culture here that I think outsiders don't really understand.
Yeah, I think from if you're not an upland bird hunter, there's differences between some of the different species that you hunt. Like whitetail hunters have their thing. I think duck hunters have their thing, but upland hunters in general, it's just a different breed. Mm-hmm. And sort of that connection between man's best friend, your four-legged companion in the field. Bird dogs obviously is a huge part of National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic, and Pheasants Forever as a whole. Our 100 and almost 50,000 members now, 85% of them own a burn dog, and they attribute that to sort of their connection to the upland. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a different breed of folk, and all their own, and it's great. I love coming to this show, talking with people. I used to be a regional rep in Iowa, working with our chapters before I moved up to the Twin Cities in my current position, and just seeing people come from 4 hours away on a Saturday to spend the day and then, you know, drive back home. It's hardcore, you know, and they like to show up and be a part of the fun that's going on.
Yeah. So. And the bird dog thing, you're not kidding. I think that, you know, there's a dog around every corner here.
There is.
Yeah.
There
all is. Different breeds. And I was talking to Steph Lane from Passing On Outdoors. She has 9.
Oh, yeah.
9 bird dogs.
I don't have 9. I've got 2. I don't know if I could do 9, but more power to her. Yeah, bird dogs themselves, the bird dog stage that we have here, sponsored by Purina and Sport Dog, you get a lot of people over there. That stage has been packed the entire weekend, and for good reason. We've got 40 to 50 different breed clubs here this year, and they've all got their dogs with. So it's always very popular. Folks coming out looking for, you know, what might be their next breed of bird dog. Are they going to they going to stick with America's dog, you know, the black Labrador retriever like I have, or are they going to change to something else? A lot of big German short hair fans. There's plenty of those at this show. All in all, you get to take a look at all the different breeds of dogs, and it's just a wonderful time, and people come together for a good cause surrounding conservation. They want people come to this show. I'd like to tell people that they come to the show because they want more places for their bird dog to roam. And Pheasants Forever has been very good at that. We can talk about it here at the booth today. We can get into some of the different access initiative and things, but access has really become part of our mission. We added it to our mission statement about 2 years ago. And access is just a really big part of why people believe in or are members of or donate to sponsor Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Access is a huge deal, and being able to go places and provide that access for you and your bird dog, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of a big thing that people don't understand about Pheasants Forever, right, is that they think you're focusing on the birds, but you're more focusing on the habitat for the birds.
It is, you know, sometimes when people see our logo, they think rednecks and shotguns. Like we're just a bunch of hunters that want to go out and shoot pheasants. Although I love harvesting a rooster, I love taking a limit every once in a while, just like everybody else at this show, there's a lot more to it than that. The work that we do, like we just talked about, provides access, but it provides, when you do good work for pheasants or quail or prairie grouse, the things that we do, pollinators, everything else benefits from that. Pheasants are a pretty colorful barometer of environmental health, and quail even more so. They're sort of this canary in the coal mine for the state of grasslands and uplands in the United States. And we're doing our part right now to try to get more. We know that we aren't doing enough right now. The scale that we need to do things at, we need to increase that. And that's, we've coming out with a new strategic plan right now and focusing our resources in the areas where we can best make birds.
Right.
How do we put boots on the ground through our chapter network, through our partners, through our biologists that we have, to make more birds in the air? And if we can do that, it's gonna impact positively everything from, you know, grassland songbirds to butterflies to bees, all those things right now that are imperiled in some way, shape, or form. We want to do a better job, a bigger job at increasing grassland acres in the United States, and this show is a big part of it.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the boots on the ground things that you do to increase land access?
Yeah.
As well as habitat, of course.
Yeah, no problem. So I think a really good example from the show this year, we've got a lot of different fundraisers this year raising money for access through what's called our new PATH program. And PATH stands for Public Access to Habitat. And it's a pretty simple deal. I'm guessing at some point in time you've hunted some type of walk-in access in a state, walk-in access in South Dakota, Weehaw in Kansas, Open Fields and Waters in Nebraska, those types of programs. And what Public Access to Habitat, PATH, does is it adds an extra layer of an incentive on top of that. So we can and we should be incentivizing landowners to open their land to access to the public. And when we add that extra layer of incentive on top of there, and you combine that with some type of conservation payment like CRP through the Farm Bill, we can get people up to a point where it's somewhat lucrative for them to do, but it's also providing huge resources to local rural economies. It's bringing people in from the outside, allowing people like you and me to go out and hunt. It helps the, you know, the mom and pop stores in those communities, the gas stations, the restaurants, the hotel or motel industry, trying to use community-based conservation is what we're big on right now. And getting those access programs going, and PATH is a great example. We're going to try to expand that in this next year throughout the United States, two different states. It's going to have the same name. It's going to be maybe a little bit different in a place like Michigan or in Kansas than it might look in South Dakota, but overall, it's helping focus on community access initiatives and how can we benefit the community and benefit the resource, which is the birds and everything else that go with that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the more people who buy in, the more this, you know, excellent resource will be around forever. Right?
Absolutely. And it, a lot of it comes back to partnerships. You know, at this show this year, you've got all the, obviously, ammo manufacturers, you've got all sorts of bird dog gadgets and gear, the sport dogs of the world, the Purinas, and all those partnerships we use, including like Natural Resource Conservation Service. South Dakota Game Fish and Parks is a big partner here in South Dakota. Significant things do not happen without partnership. So I think, you know, the organization as a whole, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, has done a really good job of working with our partners to say, hey, how can we benefit the resource? And the PATH program, and I should have mentioned this right at the beginning, is sponsored by Onyx Maps. Mm-hmm. Onyx came in and say, hey, we're trying to crack the code for more access in this country. And not just access to pieces that we sign up, but we all know there's plenty of pieces out west on corner crossings that you cannot get legal access right. to. So even coming up with conservation easements or access easements is a big part of that as well. We're doing that in places like Arizona. We're doing that in Montana right now. We actually have access specialists dedicated to those types of things. So a good example of that is last year there was a piece by Fort Peck Reservoir that it was just a very small access easement, but opened up access to more than 15,000 acres. Mm-hmm. And if we can continue to do those types of things and do the habitat alongside with it, which is a big piece of the puzzle, you know, that's important work. And on the habitat side, you know, Pheasants Forever approaches it from a couple different angles. Number one, we've got our chapter network, local volunteers, like all the different groups out there, all of our different conservation partners, and they will go out and do conservation projects in their own communities. So a good example of that coming up in May, we've got our Hands-On Habitat Month, where we're going to have chapters all throughout the United States scheduling projects where people can come out and they could be pulling fence and picking up garbage, or they could be going out and doing, like, let's say, a frost seeding on a wildlife area that needs to be redone. They could help with a prescribed burn. We've got habitat strike teams that are coming online throughout the United States to help with those types of things. Put fire back on the landscape where it used to be. Early successional habitat, so habitats that have been disturbed, are a really key piece of the puzzle right now, especially on the quail side, but also for pheasants. You can't plant something grassland wise. You can't plant something and walk away and expect that it's going to be really productive, you know, year after year after year.
Right.
If you're not managing it, it goes to a single species monoculture, which isn't good for anything. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of projects we're working on right now. And when you combine, you know, the chapters and our habitat specialists and our habitat strike teams, you combine that with what our biologists are doing. So technical assistance, meeting with landowners, creating conservation plans for them, whether it be pheasants or quail or prairie grouse or deer, turkeys, whatever your land use objectives are, we can help with that. So second to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service right now, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever have the most biologists on the ground in the United States.
Wow.
We've got them almost, I think in 40, I want to say 43 different states right now, and they are available as a voluntary free resource for landowners to help you plan out your habitat projects from A to Z. And that's everything from helping get it planted to management of it after it goes in.
After it's successful.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's such a good aspect of Pheasants Forever, handing people the how-to, handing them the checklist of,
yep.
you know, I think that a lot of people would jump right in if they only knew how.
Yeah, and that's sort of the limiting knowledge or resource out there today, is like, if you're going to do especially a prairie planting or maybe something for quail, like a weedy or brushy edge somewhere, you want to do it right the first time, and you have to manage it over time. So one of the things that I want to point to is, you know, if you're a Pheasants Forever member already, or Quail Forever member, or maybe you're not, in the Pheasants Forever journal that's coming out here in the next couple weeks that's going to be in mailboxes, we came up this year with which is called our Habitat Essentials Guide. And basically that's A to Z if you're planting grass or food plots, or you want to do some type of brushy cover, a windrow. We sort of lay out in there, like, here are the steps you need to take, and here are the people that you can contact to help you with those types of things. And throughout the country, you know, our chapters work a lot in their local communities to even help landowners, you know, do cost share for projects. It's important. It's some of those projects come with a pretty heavy price tag.
Right.
And if we can help that, and I know some of those that might be listening to this podcast would say, like, well, how does that affect me as a public lands hunter? Well, private lands make up 2/3 of the United States. If we don't have great private lands habitat, we're doing our part for access. We're purchasing land acquisitions for people to go out and do. That part of our mission is humming right now. And we just continue to add, how can we help private landowners? Because birds don't know the boundaries of a fence line. Well, we've all hunted them. Sometimes we think they do, but when it comes to like production, especially in the spring, you got to have undisturbed nesting habitat is the number one limiting factor for birds in the United States right now. If we don't have that, we can't hatch. And you know this as well as I do, that, you know, pheasants and quail and all the different prairie grouse that people come to the show to check out and learn more about, they are just prolific renesters. They will continue to renest until they hatch a successful brood. And after that, they're done. Well, not in the case of quail, but in the case of pheasants, for sure, you know, we got to provide them opportunities to have successful nests. And if we can do that, we're going to have more birds on the landscape. So in the future, we're working to be more strategic. We've got a strategic plan that I mentioned earlier that we're working. Where do we put resources to sort of defend the core of what we have and grow that core?
Right.
And if we can do that, I think we're going to be really successful.
Yeah. And the importance of the landowner is for people who own anything from, you know, a quarter of an acre to hundreds of acres.
Absolutely. There's always something that you can do on your own property. You know, we've got a cabin in Northwest Wisconsin on a little piece of property. And our house in the Twin Cities, we've got, you know, 10 acres that backs up to a wildlife area. So like a perfect example of that is my wife loves pollinators. She loves, the kids love to go outside and help hatch monarch butterflies and tag them and do those types of things. So I try to put as much, milkweed on our property as we possibly can. You know, we've got, working on a little butterfly garden right now. As far as the DNR property goes out back, our chapter helps, you know, adopt that, take invasive trees off when we need to. We've cleaned up fence lines. We do the garbage cleanups. We do everything that we need to do to make those areas more productive. So, you know, whether you've got just a garden in your backyard and you want to do a pollinator garden with it, to a couple acres, just small acreage habitat, to large things that, hey, we need to get this burned off. Those are places where Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever can step in and help you accomplish those on both the public and the private land side.
And you said pollinators many times. What role does pollinators play in pheasant habitat?
You know, believe it or not, as the years have gone by, I think pheasant and quail management has really started to evolve a little bit. You know, back in the day, you did have a lot of brome grass, which is like a monoculture mixture. But in most cases, especially in a state like Iowa, southern Iowa, it was mixed with alfalfa. So flowering plants, you had a lot of bugs, and we don't necessarily see that still today. So from a pollinator perspective, we like to plant at least 12 to 15 species of forbs in any type of mix that we do. So a forb is a flowering plant, right? Okay. Something that's going to attract soft body insects. And, you know, people always wonder, like, pheasants and quail and others, you know, normally do pretty well with average weather that's dry during the nesting period. It depends where you are. In the country. It can get real dry as you get, you know, move south, and rain is more of a limiting factor down there. But for the most part, up here in the pheasant range and in the Dakotas and whatnot, you need to keep bug production going. So in those years where we see awful droughts, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll get some rain in the next couple months here. It's been pretty dry, easiest winter we've had on record probably ever. And you know, pheasants are going to do well. But if we get into the spring and the hatch is great, if there's no bug production, if there's no forbs and flowering plants that'll you know, pulling in soft bodied insects, because that's what those chicks feed on for the first couple months of their life, 100% soft bodied insects, and that comes from pollinator habitat. So if we can have that on the landscape, not only can they nest in it to some degree, but they're gonna take and move their broods to it right away. The other side of that too is, if you think of a pheasant chick or even a quail chick, you know, when they're hatched, quail chick is the size of a bumblebee.
Right.
A pheasant chick, you know, is 2-3 inches tall when it comes out. And you think like a monoculture of grass that has no room at the soil level, no bare ground for them to pick around in. It's pretty easy for them to get picked off, or they just can't get to where they even need to go because you're you're looking at a forest in front of you, right, of a monoculture of grass. So that's where pollinator habitat comes in. It helps break up pieces of ground where you've got bare ground at the ground level.
Right.
And if you don't have that to some degree, that can be a limiting factor as well. So you want to make sure you have, got to have habitat, but it's got to be the right stuff in the right places. And pollinator habitat plays a really, really key role in everything that we do.
Yeah. So I love that you guys take like a holistic approach to it. When I was growing up, we used to get coveys of quail from our Game and Fish, and we'd raise them, you know, and just let them go. But, you know, they would just die off because they don't have habitat or food. Yep. So that really wasn't helping anything.
Yep. Yep. You know, we get questions all the time as a director of communications. I get questions all the time like, oh, why can't we just stock pheasants, or why can't we just stock quail? And the easy answer is this, is they're not productive enough to replace their own losses. You know, they're raised in a cage. They're raised in a confined area. And when they get out, they don't have any natural tendencies. And if anybody's ever interested, we've got all sorts of studies from over the years that have been done where, you know, they radio collar, you know, hen pheasants. There was one in South Dakota in the 2000s where they, you know, radio collared hen pheasants and then put out a bunch of bred captive hens on the landscape to see how they do. And just the difference in the number of chicks that they can produce.
Yeah.
It's just astronomical. So you just can't stock your way out of a habitat crisis,
right,
first of all. So when it comes down to that, you got to have the right and necessary components to habitat on the ground to make these things possible. And that's what Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever is here for, and our partners. We do a really good job. We're working with landowners to meet their needs. Like, hey, I don't have any pheasants or quail here. Why is that? Well, we can come in and help you answer that question. And, you know, we live by the motto of if you build it, they will come. Like, right, pheasants and quail are going to find those areas. They can move, especially pheasants can move up to 2-3 miles in their home range. So like they can spread out relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the necessary components for them or the right habitat, you know, you can kiss that goodbye because they don't want to be there.
Right. Yeah. So just goes to show that, like, if you care about wildlife, you have to be a steward of the land.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Stewarding good habitat practices to attract the things that you want to have in your property.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, that's the basis of, like, you know, wildlife management areas. Well, what's a wildlife management area? It's an area that's managed for wildlife.
Right,
like that,
specifically.
That's what it's for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we help with that. We help with that side of things too. You know, doing burning with our partners, going in, removing trees where we need to. You know, we get a lot of questions too on that. Like, why are you guys removing all these cottonwood trees on a waterfall production area? Well, pretty easy answer. They're not supposed to be there. That, yeah, that's, you know, historically, waterfall production areas were created for waterfowl, but you know, Pheasants Forever does a lot of work throughout the range and waterfowl production areas. In Minnesota alone, we've done about 24,000 acres of land acquisition for,
wow,
specifically for waterfowl production areas. They're the first places to green up in the spring. When it comes to late season and we get some really inclement bad weather, big snowstorms, first place they go is to a cattail slough that's typically next to some type of food source. And you know, food plots are a part of it, but they're more for sustaining wildlife through, they should be designed for sustaining wildlife through the inclement winter months.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for like, how can I design this to, you know,
to hunt easy.
Yeah. To hunt, yeah, easy. And that's not what it's for. A food plot is to get healthy hens, with in great body condition through the season so that they can have a really successful hatch when springtime comes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a little, you know, a couple ideas for people to keep in mind as they're looking, yeah, at habitat projects.
I mean, Pheasants Forever is a great educator. Even here, we have you guys have tons of panels going on.
Yep. Yep.
And I assume that's just people to ask questions to the subject matter experts.
Yeah. You know, when National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic started back in 2003 in the Twin Cities, there weren't as many panels at that time. But over the years, you know, from a bird dog perspective, you got the bird dog stage. You've got a couple hundred years of knowledge between some of the best trainers in the country. Like, come on out. People want to know how they can better better train their bird dogs, right? So the bird dog stage is all about that. And everything from training your dog to veterinary care, there's all sorts of cool things to do over there. We got the path to the upland stage back here, which has been really busy today. There's a lot of people that want to get into upland hunting, but don't necessarily have the resources or the know-how to do it. Right. That's a great stage to go to. You know, that we help each person find their unique path to the uplands. Like that's what the stage is called. So great opportunities there to learn about hunting, learn about breaking down game birds from Hank Shaw, who's a wild game cook, one of the best out there. So cool things to have there. We've got a habitat stage. Everything we've talked about here today, pollinator habitat, pheasants, quail, what can I do to increase them on my property? How should I set my, if I have 40 acres, what's the optimal habitat practices that I should be doing to produce pheasants or quail or other wildlife? So lots of great stages here. We got the youth village where kids can go and stay busy, all sorts of cool things to do. And yeah, it's just it's a wonderful show that's very educational. And you know, we've even got a landowner habitat help desk here where like people are coming from throughout the United States. In our bird dog parade that opens the show this year, we parade all sorts of good looking bird dogs through the convention center for people to look at, you know, ooh and ah. It's been the signature event. You know, from that perspective, the landowner habitat help desk that we have this year, people come from all throughout the country. We got somebody coming from Canada. We got people coming from, you know, all four corners of the United States, and we can sit you down right at a computer, look at soil types, look at aerial maps, and actually come up with a conservation plan for you right on the show floor, which I think is awesome. So, you know, this week we're sitting at, one of the ideas behind the Habitat Help Desk this year is we talked about our PATH program earlier in the show, a public access program here in the state of South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting at 7,700 acres before the show started, out of 10,000 acres that we wanted to get done in 1 year. We're 6 months in and we've almost got that fulfilled. So I'm praying and hoping that we can fulfill that this weekend, provide more access opportunities and move on to the next 10,000 acres in South Dakota. So yeah, all sorts of good things. And then when you add in the vendor aspect here too, people come out, shop, buying their goods, looking at things, learning about dog collars, learning about gear. We've got some awesome vendors that we're looking at right across the aisle, and obviously Remington as well. Just all sorts of things for people to see and do. So
yeah, full disclosure, this is my favorite show of the year.
So, good, awesome. We're happy to have you.
I know that Remington's always happy to partner with Pheasants Forever, so you guys do a great job with
thank you.
You do, and like I said, your holistic view and your mission statement is wonderful. Where can people go to find information about you guys if they're listening to this and want to get involved?
You know, the easiest way is just to go to pheasantsforever.org. You can click on find a chapter if you're interested in find a chapter and want to give up. If you want to start a chapter, that's just basically local volunteers. You hold one fundraiser per year is all we really require. Mm-hmm. And you can use those funds to impact local habitat in your own community. So that's an easy way to, if you want to find a biologist, there's a find a biologist tab on there if you're interested in habitat on your own private property. But that's the easiest way. You can find us on Facebook at Pheasants Forever and at Quail Forever, and all the different social feeds that are out there. But pheasantsforever.org and quailforever.org are the best places to go to try and get involved.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much, Jared, for meeting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You know, we've got another day and a half left here. We got a huge fundraiser tonight. Donnie Vincent is our speaker coming out here. So it should be great, and looking forward to the rest of the show and closing it out in a big way. And I'm hopeful that we'll have a big number of attendees at the end here. And it's just been a wonderful Saturday at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic.
Yeah, looking forward to the rest of it. I'm excited.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
There you have it, guys. Remington is on the rise. Like, comment, subscribe, and be sure to share this podcast with your hunting or shooting buddies. Be on the lookout for the next episode. You can find us anywhere you can stream podcasts. And for more Remington content, follow us on all social media platforms at Remington 1816. If you have any questions or have a topic you'd like us to talk about, feel free to email us at podcast@remington.com. That's podcast@remington.com.
And if you want more information about how to get involved with Pheasants Forever, you can visit pheasantsforever.org. Thanks for listening to part one of this three-part series. And tune in next Monday for part two with Ryan Cal Callahan, the Director of Conservation for Meat Eater. See you then.